Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 20th, 2022. Globally, the world's carbon dioxide levels are at 418.6 parts per million, and there are 2,872 days left until the year 2030. So there. Anyway, we here in Massachusetts are working on a roadmap to get to reduce carbon emissions. We've set goals in the year 2030 to reduce the statewide carbon emissions. One of the major carbon emitting sectors of Massachusetts economy is what's called the built environment. That is to say, the buildings we live in, and to narrow it down even more, to say your home is an important part of this struggle to achieve the roadmap, because everyone's home at some level is emitting carbon dioxide through one mechanism or another. Either you're using up a lot of electricity you don't need in order to light your home and the carbon dioxide's coming out of your local electric generator, or you're burning natural gas in the basement that's putting carbon dioxide up your chimney. Long story short, the housing sector in Massachusetts is a big component to the carbon emissions and a big component in the carbon reductions. In fact, the famous roadmap that we have been tracking lately points out that we need to electrify 1 million households before the year 2030. And that's a big, big ticket to electrify, reduce the carbon emissions from a million homes. Anyway, the good news is that there are programs in place. There are efforts that have been ongoing for some time and are getting ramped up now in the 2022 timeframe. Efforts to make homes more efficient, and in fact, reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And that program hides in something called Mass Save, M-A-S-S, capital S-A-V-E. And oftentimes you'll see a billboard on Route 93 going into Boston saying how great Mass Save is. So once you see it, you say, hell, I know about that, right? Mass Save is a program where individual homes can get an audit or get an assessment and get guidance as to how they can improve the energy efficiency of their home. It's a great thing. In fact, nowadays there's money backing that up so that you can get assistance, financial assistance to upgrade your home. Well, of course, having someone come into your home to poke around is not the first thing on everyone's list. And so today, we thought it would be useful to kind of humanize the process, figure out what does it mean to have a home assessment under the Mass Save program. And to that end, we have been pleased to be able to talk to a gentleman named Joe Wenzel, who is a field marketing specialist with a company called Homeworks Energy, which is one of the companies that provides this service to the state-run Mass Save program. So Joe has some experience with these home assessments. We're pleased. Joe, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on today, Ted.
So I, as I sometimes say, I just did the Rachel Maddow thing and gave this description of what you know much more about. I gave this sort of partial description of the Mass Save program, you know, why it's out there. Can you correct whatever I said wrong, or tell me what is the Mass Save program? What's a home energy assessment? What should people know about it? What should they expect if they get one?
Well, Ted, it seems like your impression really aligns with the majority of people in the state. They know what the aim of the program is. They might know a little bit about how it works through getting a home energy assessment. And that's all accurate, but there's a lot more to learn about the program and a lot more information that's helpful to go through before you get one of the energy assessments. Now, Mass Save was started way back, or at least in its fledgling state, way back in the gas crisis. The state mandated that utility companies run efficiency programs with the intention of cutting down gas use and sometimes electric use. Now, it became more formalized in 2008, I believe, when the bigger utility companies joined up, created this program called MassSave, which you've given some context on in a previous episode. And from that point forward, the capacity for the program to cut down carbon emissions has greatly increased. Ted, have you yourself had one of the energy assessments at your house?
Well, as it happened, I had one done about 10 or 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the folks came in, they looked through the house. They put in some insulation. They gave me new light bulbs. And in fact, as it happens, I am having another home assessment done. I guess you can do it every 2 years or so. Every 2 or 3 years, you can have another assessment done, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm having another one done because I'm thinking about solar panels and heat pumps and whatnot. And I think I would like to get some money from this program. So let me ask you a question back. How is the MassSave program funded? Every time you talk about money, everyone puts their hand on the pocket and says, okay, where's the money coming from? Right? How does MassSave get funded?
That's an important question. And on every bill since MassSave was started for a National Grid customer, an Eversource customer, and then some of the other big utilities, you're going to notice a line item that says energy efficiency charge. And that's a little mysterious, so we'll demystify that here. Those $1 to $5 a month are going into the MassSave program. So doing an assessment is really you reclaiming those benefits that you've already paid for. So we prefer to avoid the term free energy assessment. It's not necessarily free in that one has already paid into the program already. You won't automatically reap those benefits without doing one of the assessments and finding what rebates you'll qualify for. And so you mentioned you had some of the insulation done. So did you get that rebate on the insulation there? And did that end up helping with the bills?
As it happened, they put stuff, so this is now, as I say, 2010 vintage. They put they put in the insulation and they said, hey, you look pretty tight. You don't need to do anything. And I think that as now 10 or 15 years later, I'm expecting the people that do my prepaid assessment, I guess I would call it, will hopefully tell me I need new windows or how I can put it, how I would benefit from a heat pump or something like that. The money to that point, the money that's paid in this energy efficiency charge that we are all paying in advance goes into a big pot that funds the MassSave assessment program. But then also that money is used to, what's the right word? To incentivize, to pay some sort of, to pay a fraction of the upgrade costs for your home, right? If you're in the right income category.
Yes, that's correct. However, the income category is a lot less relevant to the assessments my company does. Mm-hmm. Now, at the bottom, lower striations of income, there are more advanced benefits. But once you reach a certain point, it's really the same for everyone. So you can be making quite a bit of money and still qualify for the same benefits that past a certain point. So the most important ones to know are the 75% paid for insulation for single family homes, the up to $2,750 for rebates for new heating systems, new efficient boilers, furnaces that are 95% efficiency or above, as well as the newly enhanced rebates for the heat pumps, which are an incredibly efficient heating system that the program is really encouraging. So you mentioned the state has a plan to electrify 1 million homes before 2030. Now, one might think that would mean space heaters or electric coils with resistors. And Ted, as a physicist, you would know that's extraordinarily inefficient. Now, these heat pumps are also electric powered, However, they don't create heat on their own. These are working sort of like a refrigerator, where they transfer heat from, say, outside the house inside and brings it inside the home. And these heat pumps still work, even if you go outside, it feels cold, it's 25 degrees. Those heat pumps are still actually able to absorb some of the heat energy. So they have this refrigerant liquid. Once the refrigerant goes from a liquid to a gas, and that's from resulting from a change in pressure, mm-hmm. it's going to absorb a little bit of the heat outside. As a gas, it's going to travel into your home. It's going to experience another change in pressure, and it's going to go back into a liquid, and it's going to release that heat from the phase change. And you could speak to that, the physics of all that for millennia. I'm sure many
pages. And I appreciate you making reference to it as a refrigerator, because I always say you've already got a heat pump. And I think it's kind of, to my mind, correct me if you're maybe closer to it than I, but I imagine that you could make, in some way, the heat pump idea would be to take your refrigerator, look at that rack on the back, the radiator that gets hot on the back of the refrigerator, right? You would put a hole in your wall, put the refrigerator, let that radiator part of it stay on the inside, you go out to the outside, open the refrigerator door, and plug it in. The refrigerator is going to take the heat out of the air and make that radiator inside warm, and now your house is warm, right? So that's an incredibly simplistic way of doing it. But I mean, this heat pump technology has been well known, been around for, as you say, decades. And so it's not, it is quite efficient now. And I think you would make the case, I've seen where it is fully capable of being, of running in a relatively cold environment. So the idea that it's cold outside doesn't mean the heat pump doesn't work, right? There's still heat in the air, even when it's cold, that the heat pump can get. So yes.
Absolutely. It has never been 0 degrees Kelvin in New England. That would be quite dangerous. So there's always some heat energy out in the air, even in those really cold days when you need to bundle up. There's some out there that those heat pumps can extract. I'll add a little asterisk. You know, they do become somewhat less efficient if you're getting down below, say, 10 degrees or below zero. Mm-hmm. Those temperatures will often yield an inefficient exchange in terms of the electricity you're putting in and the amount of heat energy you're getting out. Now, this is really, that varies quite a bit on the model, and they're getting better at staying efficient at lower temperatures, but still at those very low temperatures, they can be a little bit less efficient.
Tell me, does that mean, so efficiency of the heat pump, that would mean that you have to run more electricity into it to get the heat that you want. So it's not as if you're going to freeze in the dark. It's just that as it gets colder and colder, you need a little bit more electricity to make that refrigerator keep working. And it's not, I think most people's idea is that the heat pump will stop working effectively and all of a sudden you're cold because you can't get enough heat in. I think that's not what you're saying. What you're saying is that it becomes less energy efficient on the days when it's 10 degrees, but you're still warm, right?
Correct. Yeah. Which just really contextualizes how efficient they are at the 30, 40 degree temperature. You can actually expect around a 3 times exchange from the energy you're putting in to the amount of heat energy that you're able to transfer. So you don't get that multiplicative effect down at those lower temperatures there. It's maybe closer to a 1-to-1 or right. So yes, you're correct. Yeah, your home will still be heated by those heat pumps. It just won't be that extraordinarily efficient exchange that you get at more regular temperatures.
So tell me, so if I am a homeowner and I want an assessment, I've decided that I want to get my prepaid assessment done.
Yeah.
What's the process? What do I do? Who do I call? Great. What's up?
There are many, many vectors through which you can sign up for an assessment. As you mentioned, they're huge goals. So a lot of programs are really trying to encourage as many people to do it. So you might find people signing folks up in front of grocery stores, hardware stores. You can ask your questions with them. That's my position. I've done that for a few months. And that's a great way to answer questions live with someone in person about the assessment. There are also many, many call centers. Us at Homeworks, we have our own call center, so you can call in. They can answer questions the same way and get you a date for your assessment. And then also the MassSave website directly. You can go onto there, sign up for your assessment online or by phone, all very efficient ways. And then, I realize we've put the carriage before the horse. I've talked about the many benefits, the assessment, but I'll get into what can you expect from that assessment. So these assessments are when a home energy specialist who's trained by a certain contractor of the MassSave program, so say Homeworks, Adobe, Clear Results, will come into your home. They'll start by looking at your heating system. They'll chat with you and let you know what they're going to do. They'll talk to you about maybe if you have any specific energy goals, they're going to take special attention with that. But typically they'll start going to that heating system, and they're going to, if it's a combustion heating system, they're going to do a combustion safety test. And the main thing they're looking for there is carbon monoxide, which, as your listeners likely know, is a dangerous gas to humans. So that they want that to be at a minimum. And if you find a significant amount of carbon monoxide, you don't want to insulate a home. So that's a prerequisite to getting insulation.
In other words, you're saying as you make that envelope of the house tighter and tighter, you don't want a carbon monoxide leak in the basement. So one of the first things you do is to check out to make sure that everything's copacetic in that sense, that the furnace is running properly, right?
Absolutely. Even before energy efficiency, MassSave program puts safety first. Right. They do not encourage doing things that they believe would be dangerous to the residents of a building. So there are always these checks. Next, they're going up to the attic. The assessor will, if you want to follow them through this assessment, you can, but they're also very capable of running it through their own. It is very nice, though, to see live what the assessor is looking for. So I would encourage you, if you have the time, to take you a little tour with your home with a different eye. They'll go up to the attic. They're going to check perhaps under the floorboards, or if they can see that insulation, they're going to see how far does that go. If there's any insulation, some of these really old Victorians in the Boston area don't have insulation in the attic. They're going to let you know how high the program is going to insulate that attic floor to. They'll also do this. They'll offer a vapor barrier if you don't have one. So that's an air sealing.
So people probably have seen the pink insulate. What we're talking about is that sort of Pink Panther insulation, right? That people put in their attics. The vapor barrier is the brown paper or the silver paper on one side of that pink insulation, right? Just to really, is that a true statement?
Yes, it would be sort of like it can come in a couple different colors. It can be right. Like a little wrap, a little mat that you lay down that can help stop the air. We use this fun metaphor where we say this air sealing, that vapor barrier, is like putting on a raincoat. So you're stopping the wind. It's like a windbreaker. But if you just put on a raincoat or a windbreaker on a cold day, you're still actually going to lose a lot of heat. So the insulation is more like a couple sweaters. Okay. So if you have just your sweaters on a cold, windy day, it's still that air is going to be traveling through those sweaters, those little pockets. But if you put a sweater on, a hoodie, and then your raincoat over, you're going to be nice and bundled up for your winter walk. You're going to both stop the air and insulate yourself. So that's what we're looking to do in the attic.
But at the time of the assessment, they're not going to put any insulation down. They're going to basically look and decide what you would need if you were to get it, right?
Absolutely. And they'll let you know what exactly it costs, what percent is paid for by this program. And if there's any cost to you, they'll let you know that. Then they're going to move to checking the walls for insulation, which is a little bit more involved because typically walls are not transparent. Though either on a cold day, your assessor might attempt to use the infrared gun to see where are you losing the heat in the walls, and they'll be able to check if there's insulation there. And if they want to get an even clearer idea, they're going to use a probe, which is a little stick that they can poke into the wall and pull out and see what the insulation is. And I've heard people definitely consider that a little bit invasive because it is a small hole, but they do work with you in terms of, you know, what's the best place for us, the least intrusive place for us to put this. And then they want to make sure it doesn't actually do any aesthetic damage or anything like that.
I have to ask, do they carry a thing of spackle with them so they can cover the hole up at the end of it?
I'm not sure.
It's funny, I remember years ago now, with the first time we had the energy assessment done here in my home, they had the infrared camera shining around my son's bedroom. And of course, along the top of the wall was just stone blue, as if there was no insulation up there. So I had been forcing my son to sleep in a freezing cell for years. But the infrared camera is quite interesting to see the heat signature in your own home, right? It really personalizes the fact that you know everyone's home is leaking a little bit somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, even if you had the insulation done back in the early 2000s, that may have settled. So they're checking for something like that, or just may have not even been inadequate the first time they installed it. Or sometimes when you put insulation in, there's maybe certain beams that block it from getting anywhere or getting to the places you want it to go. So they're going to be able to double check that. You know, if you've been insulated in the past, they're going to give you an idea of whether or not that's adequate and it's really held up. So perhaps someone has done an assessment 5 or 10 years ago, like yourself. It's extremely worthwhile to get that peace of mind and get an idea of whether or not there's still more that you could do or if something wasn't quite adequately done the first time.
Interesting. Okay, so we've been to the basement, we've been to the attic. Then what?
Then we've checked the walls. And with the walls and attic, they're going to always be keeping an eye out for a few what they call pre-weatherization barriers. So first was that carbon monoxide check, actually, down in the basement. Mm-hmm. The next one, a big one, is knob and tube wiring. So these older homes in Massachusetts were wired with this electrical wiring that I believe was wrapped in cloth. Which if you insulate around tends to be a pretty big fire risk.
Right.
So if they see any signs of that, they're going to take note of that. And before you do any insulation work, they'll help you remediate that.
And just to say that the knob and tube wiring is sort of 1910 vintage, right? This is very, very old electrical. Most homes have sort of copper wire in the wall with modern stuff. Much but better. There are certainly in the Boston area homes that probably have that kind of. It's funny you should say that. When I was younger, my home had a gas lamp in the kitchen. That never got turned on, but it was there, and that's how they did. So the knob and tube wiring systems are contemporaneous with gas lamps in your kitchen. That's how far back they go, and most people listening to this podcast probably don't have that, and if you do, you probably know, right? But anyway, so you're checking out that important safety stuff, which is really a good thing to do. Are there other safety catches?
Absolutely. There's the mold we're going to look for and signs of mold. So if we think there's not proper ventilation in an area, we're going to let you know that's a mold risk. Mold is the type of thing where once you have it, it's really a difficult thing to deal with. So the prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure when it comes to mold. So they'll say, hey, this area could use a little bit better ventilation. And I'm not sure the numbers on the subsidies for adding ventilation, but that most contractors do have experience with, including homeworks with adding ventilation. So they'll let you know if there's anything you can do there. And then lastly is asbestos. So there is, I believe it's a certain brand of insulation from the 30s or 40s or so that actually carried asbestos in it. So they're going to, and it wasn't intentional. It just happened to be contaminated with asbestos. So they'll look out for that because they don't want to, they'll want to let you know that it's a danger to the residents. And if they end up doing work, the Mass Safe Program doesn't want to put their workers in danger.
Right. So if they see those things, they flag them for your consideration.
Correct.
Question. Let me go back down to the basement. Let's go back down where the heater, the gas heater is. Do you also look at the hot water systems when they're there?
If it's a combustion hot water system, yes, we can do combustion safety check on that. Some hot water systems are electric. So some of them are actually combined with a boiler. Very modern boilers actually do both hot water and home heat, which is very impressive. So in that case, they'll just be doing that one heating system. But yes, they can also do a combustion safety check on stoves. So if they see a stove that's looking a little bit older, or if you want them, they will be able to do a combustion safety check on a gas stove or.
I mean, there's been a lot of bad pressure on gas stoves in the kitchen lately with pollution from, unburned methane on a gas stove and particulates from the gas stove. Do you measure for gas leaks at all, or is that not part of the program in the kitchen proper?
In the kitchen, I am not sure it's the process to finding gas leaks, but the assessors are typically aware of the signs, especially when it comes to the smell when it comes to a gas leak. And once you get to a smell stage, that is definitely not a place. I'm not sure if they're doing the same process for stoves with checking for gas leaks.
Right. Okay. No, that makes sense. And I guess since they're not, I have an air conditioning unit I wanted someone to look at, but you're saying that the purpose here is for combustion burning appliances, right? So since my air conditioner doesn't run natural gas, that's not in the purview of the assessment, right?
Correct. Yes. If you have a window AC unit or one mounted on the wall, they won't be able to check it for its efficiency. But they're going to take a note of that and let you know how it'll still fit into their suggestions for how you can make the home more efficient. When it comes to those window units, they have a lot of weaknesses in that you need to take them out of the window and put them back in every year. If you leave them in, they're going to let out a lot of heat.
Right.
So they might be able to suggest alternatives to work around, like the heat pumps, work around an obstacle like that.
Right. So then we've done all the safety checks. We've been to the kitchen, to the attic, to the basement. We've looked in all the rooms. Is there anything in the bathroom that gets checked out?
They do have, yes. So they did a full assessment here. So they've gone basement, attic, walls. And lastly, they're going to look at appliances. So that would be things like shower heads. They can do thermostats. They can do little faucet sink aerators. And power strips. So those shower heads, they'll check in the bathroom. They can, see what the gallons per minute on your current shower head is. If they think you can get a more efficient shower head, they will give you one right there in the spot. Our shower heads are 1.5 gallons per minute, and you might find your average retail shower head at 3 or so gallons per minute. So we can cut that by half roughly. Then, like I said, they look at that thermostat. They will replace the old school turnstile thermostats with a new programmable one. That way, you can set it so that it's much cooler in the evenings. I always really like that. Before I go to bed, an hour before I go to bed, the heat starts turning down, so I can cool down for the night. And then automatically, perhaps a half hour before I wake up, it warms up. Mm-hmm. So they can give you a thermostat that's capable of that. And then those power strips, they'll let you know what might be the best place to put those in the house and how to use them in an efficient manner. Mm-hmm. And I'll say on the power strips, many people have these power strips that they might have procured from MassSave from some vector, and they weren't explained well. So I'll give this quick rundown here. There is a control outlet on those power strips that controls the four outlets below it. So that control outlet needs to have something both plugged in and turned on for the outlets below it to be activated. The intention there is that you may have something like your TV in that control outlet, and then devices that are dependent or contingent on that TV, say Xbox or your speaker system, plugged into the lower outlets. That way they're never drawing power when they're off, because many, many devices do draw a pretty significant amount of power when they're plugged in and off.
Well, you just explained the power strip. I was going to jump in and say the power strip is this sort of beige thing with five or six little outlets on it that everyone has a dozen of them kicking around the house, right? And you're saying that this is a more sophisticated power strip with the same thing, multiple outlets, but that it is in some sense interlocked to the main device so that you can mm-hmm. turn off your Xbox when you turn off the TV, right?
Absolutely. If you use it with a little bit of forethought, it can actually cut down the energy use of all those devices. And you can also end up using it like a regular power strip if you keep something that's always on in that one little spot, mm-hmm. and those other ones will always be on. But if you use it with a little bit of planning, then that you will find that'll drop your electric use just by a touch.
And that's an important point you're making, is that everyone has like recharging devices and little things that plug into the wall that are little tiny transformers in and of themselves. And they're sitting there consuming heat for the 99.9% of the time you're not plugged in. Right. And
yeah.
So this happens in the assessment, but if you walk around and put your hand on one of those little black things that are hanging off the wall and it feels warm, you're probably sucking up a couple of watts 24 hours a day to do nothing there. And that's just, people should be aware that one way they can reduce their energy consumption is by being thoughtful about using those sort of transformers. It's fine. It's like, just know that in my humble opinion, if I was king of the universe, I would make it so that mm-hmm. the federal government somehow regulates those little wall plug-ins so they don't consume power when there's no demand from the device you want to plug into, you want to charge. But that's a little bit far down the road. And all through the house now, right? And is there mm-hmm. anything else that they look at?
Those are the really the main items. And they will be checking. They can check around windows. If you say mm-hmm. this window has really been giving me trouble, they can both give you an opinion as to whether or not they really think that's a window that's causing a high bill. Mm-hmm. They can also check around that window for weatherization, perhaps the sill. They can check doors. They can do the weather stripping. So you might get a little bar mm-hmm. at the bottom of that door so that mm-hmm. you're no longer getting that cold air. And then there's a little bit of minutia that they can really look for through the home. And that's how you can sort of tailor the experience at the beginning of the assessment. You can let them know that you have had this window or perhaps the door or the under a porch, maybe under a three-season porch, that you've been having trouble. And they can help you with that specifically, and they can give you an opinion. The things I described at first are the main pillars, but then you can really make it your own. You have the opportunity to have this person who's been trained at HomeWorks for 2 months. We do 8 weeks of training for our assessors, and they've seen many of them, hundreds, nearly thousands of homes. So they really have seen what's the best way to optimize it. So to have someone with that experience is very valuable. and you should take advantage and have a conversation with them of how to make the house more efficient.
So tell me, at the end of the day now, you've been through the whole house, you're up and down. Presumably there's a report of some kind. So there's two questions I want to, what do you take out of the assessment? What sort of report do you get? And the other question that many people would have is, are you somehow committed to the repairs that are identified, or are they just, does the report leave you saying you could do these things? A company like Homeworks would offer to do that work, but they're not commit. The person who's getting the survey hasn't promised that they're going to go ahead and do all the fixes you suggest. Is that fair? How does that work?
That's completely correct. You'll get either hard copy or email report of their findings as to how much energy they think the house is using. And then the report will also include the line items of suggested fixings and how much your annual savings would be, how much it would reduce your carbon output. And as you mentioned, you're actually not obligated to make any of these changes. You can make as few or as many of them as you'd like. You can discuss which ones might have the greatest return on investment or the greatest climate impact with your assessor. With a company like Homeworks, and in fact, this is somewhat unique to Homeworks, we will do all the follow-up work ourselves. We will do the insulation. If there's work you need done in the heating system, we can do that. If there's problems with the knob and tube, we can help you on that path. We have in-house contractors or in-house employees to carry out any of the work that you might need.
Mm-hmm.
There are a MassSave assessment companies that are really only doing the assessment, and then we'll put the onus on you to find your own contractor.
Right.
So Homeworks is slightly bigger, so can streamline that process a little bit.
And I guess the whole point of the assessment is to pick a metaphor, right? You're turning over the rocks to see where the improvements can be made in your home. And then at the end of the day, you're presented with a list. You can basically think about that and decide which ones you want to pursue based on the kind of the financial payoff that the assessment would report to you. Right? Here's this thing, it would cost this more or less this much to fix. You'd save this much over the course of a year. And then you as the customer get to think about that, decide what you want to do, right?
Yes. In the end, you're getting information, extremely valuable information about the place you've been inhabiting, perhaps for a long time, perhaps for years. You really get to know the ins and outs of that home.
Uh-huh.
And you also get to know, what does the state offer in terms of rebates to...
It's presumably the person who comes and assesses can tell you, makes those connections for you, right? I guess I would consider that pretty valuable. So for the person to come, look around, say, okay, I see these things, you could potentially get a rebate on these five or six items, right? And that would be that's part of the value add of having the assessment done. You had this bespoke statement about how you can take advantage of the incentives that the state's providing. And tell me this, just since I'm on the, I think it is a prerequisite to get the state incentives that you have the MassSave audit first, right? Is that true?
That's completely correct. For the vast, vast majority of the rebates, there are rare rebates regarding heating systems that you can get without an assessment. But an assessment will always streamline that process. And then for things like insulation, the assessment will qualify you for those rebates. So those are, they do require that assessment for you to gain access to those rebates there.
That's great. Well, Joe, I think that this has been a fascinating conversation. I think that I hope that people who have listened to this now have a much better feel for the sort of, shall we say, tactile experience of having a home assessment done, right? You'll know who's coming in. What we will do is put up links to, so we'll have some show notes about this. We'll put up links to the various, you've called them vectors of ways that people can get into them to get themselves an appointment. Myself, I call the 66 phone number, right? And they finally just, they hooked me. So it was as simple as a phone call, but there's a lot of other ways to do it. We'll put up the links to that in the blog. It's at Mass Climate. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. That'll be the hot links there. If you have questions about this show or have suggestions about things we ought to talk about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You're probably listening to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher or one of the modern podcast distribution apps. You can find us on almost all of them except Spotify. And of course, you can go to Apple Podcasts, which is the motherlode of all podcasts. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Joe, thank you for giving us this assessment of the assessment. It's been very valuable to everyone, for everyone listening in. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah, it's such a great program to talk about.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.